Coach, it was a struggle from the start. That second half, though, got out of control. Can you pinpoint what took place and what the problem was?
Yeah, no, we got our butts whipped. That was not even close.
We just beat ourselves. Well, I had a lot of mistakes on my behalf.
It sucks. Losing sucks, and we gotta get over that.
You know, I mean, it's frustrating when you know, watching film that you're the better team and you don't come out with a win.
Oh, I hate losing. I really do.
We had a chance, and we gotta learn from it and make an adjustment. Look at the film and get better.
And it stings, but trying to tell the guys in there, you know, this is life. It can't define you.
I've never known a man work this hard who deep down in his heart didn't appreciate the grind, the discipline, and the win!
When people listen to this, it will be a recording.
That's true.
So it's live for us.
I know. Why do we say that?
Because it sounds cool and official.
We're live.
We're live. Welcome. We're live on what is this program, Spencer?
This is the Eternal Warrior Podcast.
Correct.
What is it doing, Wes?
Helping young people and all people in their quest for self-mastery, sharing stories from the battlefront in the war against Satan and pornography.
All people, you say?
All of them.
What?
Yep. We don't discriminate here. All.
All the humans.
All of them.
Welcome.
Man, if you were listening last week, that was a sacred experience to be in the room with Espen and with Caleb and with Oliver. Those kids. Those men.
Men. Men of young age. Insane.
To see like that level of commitment to each other and that pure just... I don't know, just like desire for each other's success and complete vulnerability. That's what they kept coming back to. Just like, I can't afford to not talk about what's going on with my brothers because they need me. If like, I would imagine that's the level of fraternal love that existed in the city of Eden or the city of Enoch, excuse me.
And Eden. Between Adam and Eve.
Yeah, and the animals, and right?
No, but that, just that camaraderie, that...
So can, selfless.
Yes, just yes.
Like, zero pride.
No. Yeah, those guys get it. Freaking love those
and
guys.
And Satan is terrified of them, man.
Oh, man.
And Espen's heading off to Guatemala on his mission, right?
That's right.
In a few weeks, and... Well, that's right. Our guest today has a special connection to that place, and we'll get to him in a minute. Yeah, guys, if you haven't had a chance to listen to our kickoff of season 4 last week, do it. It is it's powerful, powerful stuff. If you need to get the Warrior Chems going, whew, that'll do it. Something tells me today we're going to get there as well.
I totally agree. Yeah. Build that team. It just really, if you need help putting together your recovery team, that episode's for you.
And if you need help finding your way onto the path of recovery, go ahead and give our man Cody Hawes a call. And here's a little message from him.
Hello, Eternal Warrior Podcast fans. Cody Hawes here. So grateful for spending Wes being mentors to so many. If you're listening to this, you may be going through some unexpected pain. I have spent a couple of decades helping people overcome such hardship and would love to be of service to you. From a 10-minute free chat to a full assessment, you can call 385-519-6089 to set that up. That's 385-519-6089. Whatever it is, you're amazing, and of course, you got this.
Seriously though, guys, reach out to Cody Hawes if you have if you're in a place where you're saying, where do I go from here? How do I get started? reach out.
Countless lives have been course corrected and really helped to understand their identity and their goodness because of the goodness of Cody and his team here at Life Changing Services. And guys, honestly, if today or anytime, you know, while you're listening to the pod or you know, experiencing your recovery, you're trying to get back on track, reach out to him, reach out to us, podcast@lifechangingservices.org. We can get you in touch with whoever you need to. You want to tell us your story. If you feel like there's just something you need to get off your chest, or you're not sure where to turn, Spence and I will listen to you.
That's right.
We got nothing better to do than talk to you. So go ahead and reach out to us.
Seriously. Speaking of people that Cody has influenced, and you've heard of this person before.
This is our first three-peat guest.
This is. Whoa.
I am honored.
You know him well, but he has also brought a special someone. Cam, welcome back.
Thank you so much, guys. Oh. I'm so stoked to be here right now. I'm all smiles.
That's enough. Thank you. And your better half, Katie, is here.
Yes.
To share with us some of her experiences and the things that she's gone through and learned, being on the other side of you know, the whole betrayal experience and building it back together, you know, and what that looks like and what healthy boundaries look like in a successful marriage and relationship. So welcome, Katie. We're happy to have you.
Thank you.
Awesome. If you haven't heard Cam's story yet or can't recall, yeah, Spence, you've got
that. I have pulled him up right here. Season 2, episode 10 was the first one we did. Unreal.
What's so it good. Called? It's called
Redemption.
Yeah, Redemption.
And then season 3, episode 12, Redemption Part 2.
Part 2.
The Finarding Line.
The Finarding Line.
Yeah. That's right. And just, if you want to give just like a 2-minute overview of what we kind of covered in those things, Cam, just like your personal history a little bit. And
yeah. So the first part talked all about my betrayal of my dear sweet wife and what eventually led to my excommunication and my desire to turn around and fight and my decision to not only make myself whole but to heal my family as well. And then the second episode had a lot to do with those goal lines, those Finarding lines. Mm-hmm. As you move along that path of recovery, the goal of always moving forward and eventually getting rebaptized, and soon here in hopefully near future returning to the temple. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
So cool. You guys are the freaking coolest.
This is like we fanboy out every time we talk to Cam and like we're freaking out to have his wife here too, because hearing about just the shared hell and challenges that you guys have gone through, like we just in the few minutes we've been able to get to meet Katie here, like we can feel of her strength mm-hmm. and her goodness and power. And she has a lot that she wants to teach us today about boundaries and the importance of establishing those early in relationships to protect yourself and to protect your relationship, protect those that you love. And Katie's going to be referencing a book called Boundaries by Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend. This is one of the books that the therapists here at Life Changing Services really promote as well. But Katie, can we just start by asking you, like, what is a boundary in a relationship? How would you define it?
I would compare it to a property line fence, where it shows you who you are. Your sense of self is that within those boundaries. And the boundary that, or the boundaries that you have in your life show people how to interact with you. And if you don't have those boundaries, they get to pick how they interact with you, and you'd have no say. And so you feel less in control because you haven't provided them with any sort of guidance in how you expect to be treated.
Interesting. So that in a relationship, what does that mean, or what does that look like?
I would say that if I've had a hard day and I need time, a boundary would be stepping back and saying, I can't be your emotional support right now. I'm taking care of myself. Or I can listen to what happened today, and then I have to take some time to myself because I haven't had a break. And not letting a spouse coming home and saying, I've had the worst day ever, I need to tell you every detail, and just sitting there and listening and going, I'm falling apart because of my own day, but I'll listen to yours and I won't say anything because you've had a hard day, so I won't say anything about mine.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's so interesting. I love the analogy that you used of like a property line. Okay, like this is my space. This is, and when I think about boundaries, I also think about limits is another term that I think kind of applies here, of like, okay, I can extend this far, I can't, my property ends there, right? Like it at this plot on whatever, you know, property map I'm looking at, plat map, like that's where my property ends, and I really can't overextend myself without breaking the law, really, or pushing myself to certain limits. And like when you, I love what you said, just like, you, like this is where you have your sense of self. And if you let anybody in to do whatever they want, they can vandalize the property, they can, you know, graffiti the house, they can toilet paper it, like do all the things that I never did as a high schooler. But like, that's like, you work hard to keep your lawn nice and to keep your property up well. And the same thing goes for our personal characters and for what we're going through. And so when we're in a relationship, it's almost like we grant someone a key to enter our property, but like they still need to ask for permission to enter and to participate, and, you know, ask if we're even home, you know, can I come over and play? Well, I'm actually out tonight, right? Sorry, honey. I'm not available to do that, you know? So,
yeah. That totally, I like that visual. Is that, so I guess now, how did you come to know about your boundaries? Like, how do we know what our own boundaries should be or what they are?
I think the first way I learned was feelings of discomfort for me was if I felt uncomfortable with something that was happening. It took a while because with our relationship, I had gotten to a point where I didn't care. I had withdrawn emotionally so far that he'd ask if it was okay if he went and played basketball. I'd be like, I don't care. He's like, do you need help with the kids? I don't care. I knew I could do it without him, and I was going to anyway. And so I was just like, sure, fine, whatever. You can, if you're here, if you're not here, doesn't make a difference.
Just because it was easier to do that, or
it was easier emotionally. I didn't have to explain anything. Yeah. And I was powering through everything. I was so busy that at one point I wouldn't remember to eat because I was so busy taking care of my kids. And that was so important to me. And I was fulfilling my role as a mother so well that I had taken no time for myself and didn't recognize any feelings of discomfort because everything was uncomfortable.
Just totally numb. Mm-hmm.
Dang. So that's like the impact of not knowing your own boundaries. All of a sudden you're just numb.
Yeah.
To like the world and the feelings and to...
And think about like a property, like when it goes, you know, under maintained or whatever, right? Like,
yeah,
weeds start to grow over the walls, and, you know, where does the forest start and the property end, kind of things like that. And, you know what, like it can totally see the visual of how that is, you know, reflected in our lives. So Katie, then how did you start to realize like, okay, where is my property line? What are my boundaries?
I started with a very big one.
Oops.
Good place to start.
Yeah.
I was laying in bed one night and I had said my prayers, and Cameron was in with our newborn and he'd been in there a while. And so I was saying longer prayer for, I don't remember what reason. And I finished my prayer and I was laying there, and Heavenly Father spoke to me in the way of the thoughts came to my head, you have never drawn the line of what is too much, how far Cameron will go before you speak up and say no more. And at that point, he had made some very serious mistakes, and I had brushed them off as he was struggling. It was a mistake. He didn't mean to. And I mean, I was numb. And so I told Heavenly Father, I was like, okay, we're doing good. I think we're doing a lot better. I'll draw that line right now. I'll draw it. And so I told myself, if he messes up again, and with anyone else, I'm going to ask him to leave. And I went to sleep, and Cameron still hadn't come into the room, and I'd gotten used to going to bed alone, so I didn't think much of it. And a few hours later, I woke up to Cameron sobbing next to me in bed, and he confessed that he had messed up in a big way again. And the first thing I thought of, half asleep as I was I drew that line. Mm. And right, I didn't wait. I said, you know, I talked to Heavenly Father about this tonight, and he made sure I drew this line tonight. I need you to leave. I said, you can sleep downstairs tonight, and then I need you to find somewhere else to stay. I can't have you here. And it was a big boundary, and I did not understand myself the depth of drawing that boundary, because all of the smaller quote-unquote boundaries that I then had to make seemed so easy in comparison and so hard at the same time. They were not easy to make. But after making that one, it just made sense to figure out those boundaries and to start to come into my own again, because I did not have any sense of self at that point. It was my first boundary.
Wow. Katie, that's, I mean, awesome. Props to you. And what a powerful experience, right? Where you have that communication with God and that connection.
It wasn't as great of an experience for me.
Yeah. I can only imagine.
So.
Oh, man.
Well, and Katie, like, to have the strength of conviction, strength of conviction, to go through with that prompting. Heavenly Father knew exactly what was going to happen, right? And prepared you to do what you needed to do for your children and for your husband. Okay, like, had you not... And if you guys want to listen to the other episodes with Cameron, we go at length about his experience and what some of those, you know, slip-ups look like, and you know, Cameron's experience with the chemical scale and giving into his addiction and how that led to other things. But I'm really grateful for you and for your ability to dig in your heels and say, hey, you know what? Like, it's not okay anymore. It never has been okay, but I'm going to let you know now, and I'm going to do something about it. Mm-hmm. So you said, like, once you set that first boundary in place, you went to work on some other things. Tell us about that. What were some of those other things?
Well, my first boundaries were in relation to asking him to leave. The details involved, he wanted to come over to see the kids, and I was okay with that. He wanted to help put the kids to bed, and I was okay with that. I could not stand being in the same room. And he wanted to hold me. He wanted to make me feel better. And it wasn't what was going to make me feel better at that time. And it used, before then, even when I was in a state of, don't touch me, I need space, I wouldn't say anything. Because I knew he was trying to make me feel better. And so I'm like, well, he's trying and he wants to make me feel better, so I'll let it happen. We'll hug, sure. And at that point, I was just like, no, I can barely have you in the house, let alone in the same room as me. You can't touch me right now. I can't even think of that without this utmost panic and pain coming to the surface, and I can't deal with that. So that one was relatively easy because it was so painful to have him near. I couldn't I didn't feel like I had another option but to speak that boundary in consequence of the first boundary I'd made, that I was like, this just follows. This is it. The next one was time. I needed time to process. That one was a little harder because he wanted a timeline. Everyone wants a due date of this will expire soon, right? For the first time.
How long do I have to write the paper, Professor? Right?
Yeah. How long do I have to be good before you let me in?
Wow.
And I had no answer. All I knew was I needed time in the immenseness of I can't give a definite date. I had people suggesting, well, suggest a time, give a month, and then revisit. Mm-hmm. And I tried that, and I realized in giving that month, all he did was wait for that time marker, and he's like, okay, now we're good, right?
Let's talk. Yeah. Yeah, we're ready.
It's okay if I'm in the same room. We can hug. Like, I've given you that time. And I realized, I was like, I'm still just barely getting out of and still feeling very largely the numbness of everything. I'm in no space to give you anything right now. And so that time was then extended. And that was about the time when I started counseling and realized I don't have to give a time. I can just ask for time and say, I will do my best to keep you updated on how I'm doing. However, there's not a specific amount of steps or length of days that will automatically correct this. And it was a harder boundary because he would nudge. How are you doing? Mm-hmm. Can we talk next week or can we talk later today? I mean, you seem to be doing better. Yeah.
You up. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that one was harder. And I'm prone to caving to nudges because I feel like, well, and logical nudges. I'm like, well, that makes sense. So I should. And I had to learn how to listen to my feelings and logically, sure, it makes sense. And I don't have to follow logic because I do have emotions. And so taking boundaries for like when I feel a certain emotion, then, and making those kind of boundaries was a lot harder because I had to recognize each of those emotions and then figure out what I needed. So it's a very long, lengthy process because we would have to interact and talk, and then I'd get triggered and I'd go, okay, I need to figure out what boundary I can put in place so that this trigger doesn't happen so we can strengthen our relationship. Because if you just keep plodding over that, I'm getting nowhere and we won't be able to move forward.
So for quite a while, one of those boundaries was even, you know what, until I bring up that I'm ready to talk, we don't talk about serious stuff. This is strictly a business relationship that we are barely holding our family together. But there's no, we're not seeking connection here. We are just coexisting, and that's all I could handle is basically where she was at. And my job that, you know, the wise Cody Haas gave me advice of was, my only job was to respect those boundaries that she was setting. It was nothing more. I wasn't supposed to look for a timeline as desperately as I wanted it. My job was only to respect and hope and pray that she could find some sort of peace and healing.
And show up without the encouragement
of a wife. I still needed to show up as a dad. I was still a dad, 100%. And I needed to be there. So showing up to help clean, showing up if she wanted me to cook a meal, she wanted me to watch the kids so she could get away without any expectation of, okay, well, since I'm doing this for her, that means when she comes back, we can talk, or, you know, and those nudges. And I kept doing it because I was still ignorant. I was still naive to that process. I still did not know how to listen to my wife and her needs because I was still so selfish. As she said, she went to bed alone most nights because I would just stay up watching TV. I'd stay up playing games. I'd stay up watching porn. I would look for any opportunity to disconnect. I would go to the dance studio. I would do whatever I could to basically just ignore my family and then come home and say everything was fine. And I didn't realize it was so shattered because I was so shattered. And I was numb and she was numb. And so there was nothing there anymore.
It seems to me like for so long, like you knew you needed to like draw a line in the sand. You needed to put up a fence somehow. But then like there's a navigation of like, it just seems like you've done everything in your life up to this point for everybody else. You've been so selfless, Katie, and maybe there's been cultural pressure or familial pressure to do that of like, well, this is what a good mother does. This is what a good wife does. And we sometimes lose ourselves and loving and respecting and caring for ourselves in that need or in that vein. And if everybody else around us gets used to that, then that's kind of what we expect. And so Cameron is waiting. I mean, the entire like timeout experience is like, oh, this is for Cameron to be in timeout. And then it seems like things started to change when you're like, no, this is actually time in for me to realize and for me to heal. And for Cameron to realize that he's like, it's not about me. This is about Katie and taking care of Katie. And however long that takes, I don't care. And that takes time. And that's hard. Mm-hmm. And it almost seems like some of the boundaries that you set, like you kind of tested those boundaries, those limits. And then you trusted your emotions and your feelings of like, okay, like, no, this isn't good. Almost instead of like a legit, if we go back to our metaphor, instead of a legitimate fence there, maybe an alarm goes off. Or sometimes it's okay to be in this area of the house, but if the carbon monoxide's going off or, you know, there's smoke alarms going off, then that's not a safe place to be. Mm-hmm. And we kind of have to test that, right? And figure things out.
I think that would be interesting to hear then is what did you learn about emotions then and what they were, you know, teaching you or telling you as you were trying to set those boundaries, but then test them. And I don't know, that whole process.
Well, so one of the things I learned in setting boundaries is that the common negative emotions that people say, oh, don't be mad, don't be angry, don't be sad, don't be fearful. They're negative. They're bad for you. You should not be feeling these. You should feel happy. And while, yes, our goal is to feel happy, that our body is so good at giving us information and natural instincts that are speaking to us in the only way they know how. So the two biggest that helped me understand how to listen to my body was first anger. It's very common to hear anger being a response to trauma and betrayal trauma. And its primary purpose that I understand is to spur the person to action, that something needs to happen, something needs to change. That anger, it just wells up inside so that you do something about what's making you angry. And that one, I guess, at first when I was dealing with coming out of being numb, I mean, I felt numb for a very long time and I was like, I'm still not feeling anything. Anger's generally the first one that bubbles up because it's the easiest and it's supposed to help your body move forward and start looking at more than just numbness. And so it was pushing me into looking at what I needed to change so that I felt like me and changing how I lived my life so that I wasn't Cameron's wife. I was Katie. And then I guess the other emotion, fear, is telling you to step back. When someone yells at you, you feel fear and you should step back. You remove yourself from the situation so you can look at it clearly and you can analyze and assess what you need to go forward with so that you don't react, that you respond with your logic and your intelligence. And as I think it was Maurice said, that you respond with your own inherent dignity that you have within yourself. And so those emotions are teaching you to do things that you haven't felt. And so it's teaching you without damaging you, I guess.
Wow. It's just so, it's fascinating because for so long, and I think maybe culturally, I don't know if it's cultural or just human nature, that we say anger, fear, bad, don't feel. So we suppress a lot of that, right? We say, no, I'm not supposed to be feeling that. So I'm going to numb it out.
I think it's partly we tell our kids not to because we don't like their outbursts.
Ooh, interesting. And so then do we, as we grow as children, we're like, oh, I'm not supposed to feel this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Or maybe I can't set that example, right? Of being, yeah, that's a tough one. And I don't have kids, so I don't have to worry about it. But yeah, I think that's like, one thing I love.
That's a cycle. Yeah.
That's one thing I love about the programs at Life Changing Services, though, whether it be Men of Moroni, Sons of Helaman, Worth, which we'll hear about in a minute, Daughters of Light, is it embraces that gamut of emotion. So it helps us understand our brain chemistry and helps us realize it's okay to be mad, it's okay to be sad, it's okay to be disappointed, but it's not okay to let your emotions drive your actions. Okay? We act based on our value system. It's okay to feel angry, but does that give me license to break stuff and freak out and go on a tirade or a tantrum? No. I can school my emotions, right? That's the point. Like, you're going to, part of being human is you're going to feel lust. You're going to feel sexual desire. That's a good thing. That's why we're here. Mm-hmm. Someone liked our parents enough to, you know, make a baby and stuff. So like, that's why we're here. But schooling those emotions and giving a proper outlet to it. And I think boundaries are a great way to do that. Right. Really appreciate you talking about that. Thank you. Where are we at?
I know.
So much.
There's so much to to uncover, Katie. I know there's like so much here. I guess as we're having this conversation, what have we missed anything? You're like, oh, I want to talk about this when it comes to boundaries, setting boundaries, creating boundaries, emotion, like we just talked about there. Anything else there?
One thing that comes to mind is when you're married and you have a spouse, they have an adjoining property, and so your property lines line up. And I read in my boundaries book about when you try to water your own lawn and it instead runs off into your neighbor's yard, and you've been watering and watering and your yard's dying and you're like, I'm watering it, and that your neighbor is going, oh, my lawn's great and I didn't have to do anything. to then learn how to fix your sprinkler system and your watering your lawn so that you're cultivating your lawn to how you'd like it. And thus your neighbor or spouse then has to learn how to take care of their own lawn because they haven't been. Because like you've mentioned culture a few times, and I know that one of the things for me is for the first 7 or 8 years of our marriage, I was told repeatedly how supportive I was as a wife and how good I was and how wonderful I was being so calm and rational and understanding as a wife. And it wasn't until I had one bishop talk to me and says, you're not helping. You're actually, what's the word?
Enabling.
Yeah. And it crushed me. When he first said it, I was like, you're kidding, right? And that was the same time as everything else that was happening. But it makes me think of that lawn. I was watering his lawn because I was good at it. His lawn looked so good and I could look at it and it was perfect. It was great. And I wouldn't look at my lawn because I was too busy. I had so many other things to do that I was really good at. I was really good at taking care of Cameron. I was really good at taking my kids.
Everybody else's lawn. And there's no water left for your own, right?
Yeah. So I had to learn how to stop watering his and letting him learn to manage his own lawn. And I had to learn how to manage mine. that I was like, I was so good at everyone else's, and I'd look at mine and go, well, what's wrong with mine? I don't even know what's wrong with it. And
wow.
So I had to learn that first so that I could move past.
It kind of reminds me of Cody would always talk to us, because we also did couples counseling with him for a while as well. And he would talk to us about the hitching of wagons. And
well, that's a Maurice thing, yeah.
That's another Maurice thing. Maurice, he's a smart guy. He knows what he's talking
about.
He
knows stuff, yeah.
So basically, Katie packed up her wagon, and she said, I'm going. And you are welcome to come along, but you're not riding in my wagon. Mm-hmm. You can bring your own wagon. You can walk behind moping. You can throw a fit. That doesn't matter to me. It's not going to affect me. If you choose to come, you're welcome to come. However, I'm not bringing you with me. It's your choice if you come or not. And when I heard that, that was a very life-altering perspective, that I had to not only just pack up my own wagon, my wagon was useless. I had to learn how to fix my wagon. I had to prime everything. Mm. I had to shape everything. And then I had to pack everything. And then I had to follow along. And I had to stay on the same path. Because if I decided to get tired or give up on the journey and turn back, I knew that was going to be the end. That was going to be the end of our marriage. Mm. And it wasn't because she decided to go on without me, because that's unfair. She made the healthy and righteous choice. It was my job.
It's interesting you bring that up. What did it do for you in your, I guess, in your recovery in your life when she makes these, hey, this is my wagon, this is my property line? When she starts setting those boundaries, what did that do for you?
Well, since I first came from more of an addict mindset, my first thought was, she is so selfish. Like, I couldn't believe how so, like, she's making it all about her.
And it was unfair. That was a common term. That's so unfair.
This is so unfair.
Sound like a teenager. Yeah.
That's so unfair. This is so unfair.
Let me have the car.
Come on, Dad.
I deserve it.
Come on. And you know, because I had it like a teenager, I had a very unhealthy and selfish mindset, because I could only see my own reflection. I couldn't even see her. But as things started to go on, the one path that she did give me that I really appreciated was she kind of laid out this outline for how our relationship was going to go. And she basically said, right now we are acquaintances. We know each other, nothing more. When I'm ready, we can be friends. And if we like each other as friends, maybe we'll date. And if our dating goes well, maybe we'll get engaged. And if we get engaged, I would love to get married. And you know, that ended up coming into fruition, where we actually did renew our vows and technically did remarry each other, and had that, and we followed that timeline. And I thought it was, at first I hated it, because I was like, I don't want to be your acquaintance. I want to be your husband. I want that role back. But as time went on, I loved my best friend, Katie. Mm. I loved that it got to that point where there was no expectation of intimacy. There was no expectation of deep, meaningful conversations, because she wasn't ready for that. What there was I could be a really good friend. So we learned how to be each other's friends. And then when we started dating, we learned how to laugh and smile and love again in a way that still did not include the physical side of things. It eliminated it completely from the scenario. And so we dated, and then when we were engaged, I still, that first kiss was that first kiss was the most surprising thing I think I've ever had in my life. Just casually sitting there laughing hysterically on the couch, and she just kisses me. And I was like, wait, I wasn't ready. Can we go again?
You guys are like teenagers right now, and it's the cutest thing in the world.
It really was. And you know, it's like, as much as it sounds all cutesy, and I hope it doesn't sound fake, it was so genuine. We laughed genuinely together for the first time in years.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we should mention, it was still hard. There right. was there was real angst in, well, I'm ready to move past that friend stage. I want to date you. And there was a point when I was like, okay, I guess I'm ready. And then I realized I wasn't ready. And I had to say, I'm not. I have to go back to that friend stage and you have to wait for me. You can't just skip to the dating phase without me. And so he had to rein back and go, okay. And so there, I mean, every stage he was always ready before me.
This is like such healthy communication.
I know. Love it. But this isn't this, we don't, I don't think we do this in a relationship. I don't think we do this, but this sounds so, when you're saying, you're setting healthy expectations.
Expectations has been a big word for me lately.
Yeah, talk about that. Let's talk about expectations.
Well, there are so many expectations that you come into every situation with that you're like, oh, well, of course, if I'm going to a restaurant, I'm going to eat. If you kiss me, we're going to kiss longer. And in our previous marriage, quote unquote, the expectations for everything was physical intimacy. Mm. You look at me. We're gonna be getting close tonight. Oh, she held on to me. That was a longer hug. She's really into me tonight. And it got to the point where I could barely hug him and I could barely kiss him because I was like, I know I don't want to do anything tonight, so I can't. And I'm a very naturally affectionate, physically affectionate person, I think. And so it was very stifling. And so as our new relationship progressed, expectation was everything. What I wanted was, let's lay out the expectations. This is going to be a date where all we do is talk. Or this is a date where all we do is cuddle on the couch. When we had to set expectations of, this is all it's going to be. And even if we feel like being closer, if we feel like kissing, we feel like doing more, we're not going to, because the expectations were set. And it's taken out a lot of confusion, and it's taken a lot of, I think, angst out of the guesswork of a relationship.
Well, and for me, it's taken a lot of the rejection out of things. You know, a man who his wife says, no, I'm not in the mood tonight, feels like, you know, his brain immediately goes, oh, well, she doesn't love me, or she doesn't like me, or what did I do?
Or I worked so hard today to get you to kiss me.
I took you out on a nice date. I got dressed up. I wore cologne.
Right.
And
I showered. I
showered for you. And then, you know, but it's been an amazing discovery to realize, even if I say, hey, I am so into you tonight. Mm-hmm. I'm so attracted to you. You're beautiful. And she goes, and I would love a cuddle date tonight. For me to just say, I would love that too. And not feel like, oh, she's turning me down. Or she even says, tonight, I really just need to go in the office and read a book and have some me time. That I don't have to say, oh, well, she's shying away from me. But my brain immediately goes, and I can provide that for you. I've got you. Take your night off. I would love to show up for you. There's no rejection in it anymore. There's no feeling like my wife doesn't love me. It's all just, it's that healthy communication. If she was upset with me, she would tell me. So I don't need to fear that she's upset with me, because I know she would tell me if she was.
Wow.
So
you guys are adorable.
The coolest. This is the coolest. And as you're talking about this, that process and taking it back, even just in that dating sense, right? Maybe we're gonna be friends, or we're acquaintances. Maybe we'll be friends again. Maybe we'll be this. Just shows to me it really is, it's a process, right? It's a journey on both sides, right?
I wanna be clear here. This is not something that's necessarily earned as it is learned. And you guys learn each other's boundaries. Yeah. You learn to appreciate and respect and love each other more. You're not earning it. You're not saying, man, I put in my time on the date, I'm picking up my paycheck tonight, right? Yep. Like, no, like, it's, I'm learning more about the beautiful nuances of my friend. or of my girlfriend or of my fiance or of my wife or however that relationship progresses. I just think that's, it's awesome.
So I would be curious, what did that, as you go through this and you start setting these healthy boundaries and you're learning this, what did it do for your own identity? Right. And Katie, you mentioned this earlier. I want to come back to this because you're like, I am a mom. I am Cameron's wife. Right. What did it feel like? I guess that process of like, wait, I'm Katie. Like, this is who I am. This is me again. Or I don't know, what did that feel like? What did that look like?
It felt as if there are pieces of me that I am Cameron's wife. And that is a piece of me. I am a mother, and that's a part of me. And those things make up more of who I am. However, the core of me is now there, that I can say, I'm not funny because I'm Cameron's wife. I'm funny because I'm Katie. I'm not nurturing because I'm a mom. I'm nurturing because I'm Katie. And it shows through my being a mom with my kids. And Whoa. It becomes less of those parts defining me, and instead they're parts that the definition and core of me gets to show and shine through.
School is in session, guys.
Yeah. Seriously.
We just got to learn.
It's like a Christmas tree, and the ornaments aren't overshadowing the tree itself, you know?
Ooh, I like that analogy.
Great.
I'm getting weird with the metaphors today, I feel like. But, yeah.
No, but wow, right? That actually, I am, Katie, I am a nurturing person. I show that through being a mom, right? That is like...
Like the individual confidence that comes with that identity. Like, Cam, like how much more respect does that build in you for your Katie here?
Oh, man. You wouldn't believe the amount of admiration that I feel when I look at my wife, that I can come home and even if the house isn't perfectly clean, I come home and I see her standing there in the kitchen and my mind is just blown. I'm just like, why was I so lucky to find such an amazing person? Where before it was all selfish, now it's turned into this, how lucky am I? How blessed am I? How blessed is our family? Because we have someone like Katie to bless our lives. I look at her totally differently. It's so fun. As much as that might be a weird way of wording it, it's fun to see this woman in a totally different light, even from when I first saw her in college and thought, oh, she's cute, to dating and going through all that, to now it's just like, I like you even more now because of how independent you are, because I know you're not gonna let me step over any boundaries. You're powerful, you're smart, you're funny. Like, you are the total package, and she's so full of wisdom and the spirit, and I mean, she has become basically a guru for me to be able to turn to when I need wisdom. And yeah, it's just my respect is limitless for her. So, and I've got her blushing, let me just say that right now.
I know. That was a moment where I wanted to do the like,
I want to ask you one last question real quick and then we can probably wrap up, but there's a lot of myths and lies that Satan proliferates about boundaries. And I want to know, Cameron, some of the lies that Satan's told you about boundaries, and Katie also, like, what do you feel like, what's bad advice that you've seen out there about when people are like, well, you should do this for your husband. I don't know. What would you say to that, Cam?
I'm actually really glad you asked that. That is an awesome question. Satan had a very permanent residence in my mind for a long time. And so
he was getting his mail there, man.
Yep. I truly believed for a time that because my wife set boundaries, she didn't love me. You know, Cameron, I need you to leave the house. Oh, so you don't love me anymore. Cameron, I can't talk about our relationship. Oh, so you don't want a part of our relationship anymore. Cameron, I can't have you in the same room. Oh, so you're disgusted by me. You know, and even it continued on even when we were living in the same house but staying in separate rooms. You know, it was just like, could I maybe even just sleep on the floor in the same room? I'll do that. And it's just like, no. And, oh, see, she's never going to be able to love you again. It's the setting of boundaries. Satan twists it into the withdrawal of love, when really what it is her setting boundaries was her way of saying, I'm fighting for you. I am doing everything I can to make sure I can look at you with respect and trust and feel safe in your arms again. That's why I'm setting boundaries, because I need to feel safe in your arms. And it, guys, it took me a very long time to recognize that. And once it clicked, again, that's where all that respect comes from.
It's awesome.
I love that. What would you say to that, Katie? Yeah, like the myths of boundaries out there.
The biggest myths that I was faced with, the first one was putting up a boundary is building a wall, that you're shutting me out, which ties in with another myth of you're punishing me. Your boundaries are punishment because I did something wrong. And the other one that kind of goes along with it is that it's a permanent wall. You're building this permanent wall to punish me and push me away. And as I studied boundaries and I really looked into how to deal with boundaries, and this book deals with it, the boundaries book deals with it quite a bit, that boundaries are an invitation to show how you love that person the most. Mm. It's a way of inviting them closer than they could ever possibly be on their own without those boundaries guiding them. Because if they stepped over a boundary they didn't know or that you didn't know about, you still feel that discomfort. You feel that withdrawal. I'm very much a, when I get hurt, I withdraw. And so even if I never made actual boundaries, they would still be there and I wouldn't know about it, and they'd be crossed and I'd still be hurt and I'd still withdraw. And you can't love someone if they're withdrawing. And so I feel very strongly that boundaries are there to invite people closer. They're saying, you're saying to someone, I love you enough to show you the way to be closest to me. Ooh. And I feel really strongly about it, because there are so many instances in our lives where it's just not just with spouses that we need boundaries, that we have so many people we care about and that we want to let into our lives. We want to be close to people. And if we don't show them how we want to be treated and the way we want to have those closer moments, those connections are so much deeper when boundaries are followed and you feel closer and you feel that love so much stronger, because you didn't cross the boundaries. You didn't cause any pain in attempting to show your love. And it just, I think it permeates every part of our lives.
Dang.
Yeah, that deserved a
gaspy. That deserved a good gaspy.
Dang. How'd you score this woman? This is incredible. Wow.
It's me.
I just, like the lies that Satan tells and that the world teaches, like, they're always going to be selfish. You know, when Cameron, when you were talking about like, oh, she doesn't love me. It's all about you, right? Oh, she doesn't love me. She doesn't want to talk to me. She's disgusted by me.
You're a me monster.
Yeah, you're a me monster, right? And it's never once. And Katie, same with you too. Like, of like, oh, he doesn't, or I, my, or it's all kind of focused. It's like attacking your selflessness and your nurturing side of like, oh, I guess I'm not as thoughtful as I thought I was, or something. Like, it's all about you, right? Instead of
if I have to say no, I don't care about you.
Yeah, exactly, right? Instead of like being able to say, I love how you said it, like, let me show you how to love me in the best way.
Yeah.
My capacity will increase if we do it this way. Like, you will feel it. Like, we'll be.
We will grow the property line.
Yeah. Oh.
Property value is going up.
High five. Yeah, our combined properties. Whew. We're talking like San Francisco high rise.
We're real estate moguls.
Oh,
so
yes.
We get this.
We understand.
We understand.
Yeah, I think their combined property would sell for like 800 trillion bills.
Trillions. Yes. Trillions. With a T.
I have to check with my realtor first, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
We're good for
we'll
it.
Check our pro, we'll check our pro forma and yeah. We'll get back to you on that. Yeah. This has been so educational. Spence and I are both in, like, well, Spence is married, but I'm in kind of a new relationship, and just to see the level of...
Hey, bro, congrats.
I know, it's weird. It's great, though.
I'm, like,
it's
thrilled the right now. I just got giddy.
Yeah. She's pretty neat. So. She's awesome. But just to like, learn from you guys, thank you for teaching us how to...
So real quick, though, if there's anyone that... has been through any sort of betrayal trauma, there are resources out there. And I don't know. Katie got to experience some of those resources, and it truly was an amazing experience in helping her heal for herself. It was, you know, wasn't there to heal our family. It was to help Katie find that beautiful Katie that had been lost in all the numbness. So I don't know. Katie, would you mind talking about the programs and counseling and stuff you experienced?
Yeah. Shortly after I asked Cameron to leave, I found a group called Worth that it was eye-opening in the way of it was a group of women. It is a group of women. They still meet. I haven't been in a while. They meet together in groups, and instead of talking about their husbands and what they can do for their husbands, they say, "We want to hear your experience. We want to hear how you are doing." And it was interesting because my first time, it was, "Don't tell me about your husband and his addiction or anything that's going on with him." Because for years, that was what my story was. It was, "Oh, well, Cameron's going through all this and we're working through it." And instead it was, "What has happened to you? What's going on with you?" And these wonderful group of women taught me how to take care of myself, not in the typical self-care of, "Oh, go take a bubble bath," but
mani pedi day.
Yeah,
some ice cream.
It's a very popular belief and very much toted that way because it's like, well, then it's not really necessary. It's just extra. And I learned how vital and important it was to take care of myself. And I remember the first time they asked me about if I was doing my self-care goals that I had set. I broke down in tears because I hadn't done any of them. And I mean, I was forgetting to eat. I wasn't reading my scriptures. I wasn't connecting with God. I wasn't working out. I was doing basically the bare minimum of taking care of my kids. They were my priority because I just couldn't fathom taking on more. And they took me, sat me down and just said, "Self-care can be as easy, fast, and simple as eat breakfast every day. Take a nap when you're tired. Take 15 minutes to take a nap. Walk around your neighborhood with your kids. Like, self-care doesn't have to be just yourself." And that group of women really empowered me to look at myself and say, "I have things to improve myself so that I can heal." Mm-hmm. My husband's going to do his own healing. He has to do his own work. And it helped me separate from him because I'd been so intertwined with his battles and fighting them for him that I was like, now I have to take care of myself and learn how to do all of mine and let him do his. And they were amazing at helping me find that.
That program is called WORTH, stands for Women of Rebirth Therapeutic Healing. It's one of the programs here at Life Changing Services. If you check out lifechangingservices.org, it's right on there under wondering which program is right for you. It's the second one down from Sons of Helaman. So. Mm.
Any other, I'm glad you asked, Cam, I'm glad you brought that up. Any other recommendations, right? There's people out there, couples, even individuals, right, that base their worth off of
their partner, right?
Their partner or whatever else that is.
Or what they're doing.
Yes. Yeah. Instead of finding that themselves. Any recommendations, other resources, or other things that have helped that as we, you know, conclude this conversation, what other thoughts do you guys have for those out there?
One of the biggest phrases that Katie has brought up a lot through this process over the past 2 years, 2.5 years, has been stand in your truth. And in doing so, you know, when you stand in your truth, the words and behaviors and actions and opinions of others no longer should affect you.
And the guilt falls away.
Yes.
You don't feel guilty about standing in your own truth because you know it's true.
Yeah. And I shouldn't say should, but they won't affect you because you've got a healthy enough mindset that, as Katie just said, that guilt isn't there. You're not being selfish. You're taking care of the person God wants you to take care of. And that is not a selfish act. And I think that is where there's a lot of confusion, to confuse selfishness with self-care. But Heavenly Father wouldn't want you to go without eating meals. He wouldn't want you to go without sleep. He wouldn't want you to not connect with Him because you're dealing with so much other stuff. Mm. So.
Yeah, because like the scripture of lose yourself and you'll find yourself.
Yeah.
I think we've always interpreted that as, okay, I just gotta
go serve other people.
I'm gonna just lose myself. Yeah. Like, I'm just gonna go, like, not sleep, not gonna eat, I'm just gonna focus on other people.
And if you lose yourself in the music,
in the moments?
In the moments.
I just wouldn't want to go.
And that's acceptable.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah. This has been so, like, soul feeding for me.
Yeah,
to be here with you guys and to hear from you, Katie, especially your experience. And man, we ask a question at the end of each podcast episode. If you haven't heard from Cameron or from anybody else, but we ask people why they fight and why they won't give up, and we want to ask you that question.
I fight because I know the inherent divinity inside me demands no less.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
Nothing else needs to be said.
No. Man, this has been just such a...
Katie.
Thank you for being here and for being who you guys are and for being the best versions of yourselves.
I'm willing to share your story, this vulnerable piece of you, but all of these pieces that you've learned yourselves, I can't imagine on the other side, as it has been for me, so instructive and just thinking about these things differently. It's a different way of thinking. It really is. Like, I think it really is. And I love what we've heard today. Really appreciate you. Any of you guys listening out there that are seeking this type of recovery, this type of healing for yourself, for your relationship, for your family, reach out, get help. You can do this.
Guys, every story in these couples' conversations is so special. But also, like, the fact that we have so many tells us, like, that it's possible for you. I think of these two here. I think of, like, Nate and Kaylee when we had them on here. I think of, like, even people who've, you know, gone into relationships like you and Ash and Biz and Thane, and just we're so blessed for your examples. Thank you for giving so much hope. Warriors, fight hard. And give those that are in your corner a chance to recover themselves and to find those find healing for themselves. Establish boundaries, not to prohibit or restrict love, but to enhance it and cultivate it. And actually give it a chance to grow. Let water fall where it needs to. Guys, we love you so much. We're grateful for you and for tuning in here. And until next time, Wes and Spenny out.